Hey guys, it's Mark Potter again. Welcome to another episode of Brushstrokes, a podcast powered by Canvas Magazine. Today's episode is brought to you by Conduit Incorporated. Visit www.conduit-inc.com for all your custom content needs. Guys, today's guest probably needs no introduction. He is a renowned author in the industry. He's a great writer for whatthethink.com and probably one of the leading, if not the leading, researcher in our industry. He's just authored a new book with a couple of buddies called Unsquaring the Wheel, and he is a frequent speaker in our industry. He has great insight. He has been remarkably forthright in where he thinks our industry is going, and sometimes maybe even gets a little bit of a negative connotation when it comes to that. But the reality is, my guest, Dr. Joe Webb, is probably one of the most optimistic people for our industry. He sees opportunity where others might see some stagnation. And if he is blunt in the way he talks about where our industry has come from or is going, he is remarkably hopeful for the future. I found that it was a delightful conversation. I could have probably spoken with him for half a day just soaking it all in, because he does see what a remarkable opportunity there is for our world. So without further ado, I would love to share with you some of the excerpts of my conversation with Dr. Joe Webb. Hello.
Hello. Gosh, you're loud. Let me.
You got your headphones turned way up or something?
I do. No more earwax now.
That's good. We want to wake not just the audience, but we want to wake up our speaker. So that's good. That's good news. How are you?
I am fine, thank you.
And how is beautiful Raleigh? Is it windy over there?
Incredibly windy.
Yeah, the south is getting a lot of wind.
No rain. Yes, it's this front passing through, but it's supposed to be, in a couple of days, we're supposed to be in some really nice stretch of weather, so 70s and sunny. So we will take it.
That's good. You've been busy?
Yes. But I'm trying to figure out what have I been busy at? That's a good question.
Well, I mean, my perception of you is that you've always got stuff going on. You've been
constantly busy. This is a week when a lot of economic data come out, so we're always busy with that. In the process of writing a column and preparing for next week's webinar, and got a few other projects that are underway. One of which is a project for NPES, and just a whole bunch of other things.
That's good. Are you a hard worker?
I try not to be. I try to work smart.
That's good. I'm curious about that kind of stuff. You know, we're in this day and age of being able to, where you have to kind of do a little dissecting and, you know, it's just a different day. Hard work is never goes out of style, but
it does. And if you want to achieve something, you've got to do it. So, but you know, working smart along the way has often better results. I mean, it's kind of the difference between, are you digging a hole with a backhoe or with a teaspoon?
Right. Yeah. I used to say, you know, you can mistake activity for progress. And, you know, sometimes I feel like I'm dealing with a lot of people who are doing that. They're just, they walk in and they're just trying to stay busy, but they're not really working on the stuff that matters.
A boss I had a long, long time ago had a phrase for that called dynamic inertia.
Yeah. That's exactly right. We have some of that going on in our industry, don't you think?
Just a little.
No, I mean, you know, we if it's not a printer who's just, you know, trying to keep that machine running, or you know, a salesperson who's just making the calls rather than stepping back and working on a different direction altogether.
And a lot of times there are constraints that don't allow them to do those kinds of things that they should be doing for some printers who are a little too close on the finances and the cash flow. You can understand them sticking with what they know. Mm-hmm. For a lot of the salespeople, they're measured on things such as how many calls did you make today, how many proposals did you get out, mm-hmm. and stepping out actually penalizes them in terms of the way that they're compensated and evaluated.
Yeah.
So it becomes its own counterproductive and vicious circle.
Yeah, it does. And you know, and I want to talk about that. I want to ask you about that. You know, you and I have talked before and had a stimulating conversation, and I want to go back to some of that and ask you specifically about the path forward and all that. But first, I want to, just for going through our little checklist, tell me about unsquaring the wheel.
Well, in 2012, I was a speaker at the Cross Media Innovation Center at RIT, mm-hmm. you know, Rochester Institute of Technology.
Yep.
And one of the speakers was Chris Bondi, who was in charge of the media program at that time.
Great guy.
Chris is still on their faculty, yes. Wayne Peterson was there. Wayne's a consultant in the industry.
Yep.
Mainly on the marketing and the strategy side. And we were at the cocktail table. I don't drink, but I should, and especially after knowing these guys, right?
Yeah.
So we're talking about the industry and solving all the industry's problems, and we talked more and more and more. And a few weeks later, we started to work on this project, which is a way of evaluating where printing businesses are at this particular time across 9 very defined characteristics or areas of their operations, believing that all 9 of those have to have some kind of congruence in order for them to move ahead. But printers and print owners and top executives, just like most other businesses, they have so many things to do and so many things that they want to get to, that it's hard for them to prioritize. So we believe that what we developed allows them to figure out what to do first. I mean, so often it's let's get a new salesperson, or let's you know, find a customer like, you know, this particular one, and they go and do all those things, but things don't get better, things don't change, they don't change their ability to interface with the marketplace in new and interesting ways. They just go about doing things that seem to have the biggest payback early on, while at the same time there may be things in their business that they're not fully cognizant of, that unless they fix those things first, mm-hmm. these other initiatives that they're taking won't have any real effect. So we go through evaluation process, which can be done online, and they're able to see that, and they get a chart that explains it, and then they say, now I know why I should do my process first or my business development first, and not worry about you know, this particular area in finance or whatever. So we each took 3 of the 9 pieces. Wayne took a lot of the executive management and marketing and product development side. Chris took issues related to technical products and workflows those kinds of strategies, and I was left with the thing they didn't want, which we always kid about, which are our people, resources. Not all resources are financial, as we know, and an area which we think is very special called alliances. And in light of the capital structure of the industry and individual companies, we think alliances between companies and content creators and implementers and distributors and the like are going to be a really key way of making sure that businesses can be flexible and have the right capital and technologies for what they need to do.
It sounds awesome. I mean, did you have fun doing it?
Yes, we had fun reading the book. And as Wayne and Chris often say, it's a good thing we met every week by GoToMeeting because we're each of us are still alive, considering some of the discussions that we had. So the book is Unsquaring the Wheel. It is available on Amazon and also through RIT Press.
That's
and
cool.
It goes through all of these things. And it's really a different way than graphic communications production and printing have been taught. Has a totally different philosophy than what you might have gotten from a traditional program. So the big news about it is 4 months ago we were approved to have a nonprofit 501c3 organization, and we're about to start soliciting underwriters for the work that we're doing because we need to put this in educational modules that can be delivered at low cost to printing executives and others who need to know these things. So it's a long range plan for us to be involved in putting these ideas in a very structured and professional education format.
That's awesome. Yeah, I mean anybody who can do that, you know, which speaks to where this whole thing is going, and you know, I certainly you know, with the book again, Unsquaring the Wheel, it sounds like it's put together really well by three really bright people. But maybe you can speak to a little bit of what you were just talking about, the, you know, the alliances and finding those alliances, and that speaks to me at least, and I assume this, that this group, this industry, these individual companies are going to have to define themselves a little bit differently. That sounds like they're not necessarily defined by the assets that they've got. They're defined maybe by the markets that they're going to serve, and those alliances are a derivative of that. Is that true?
Some of that is very, very true. As you were saying before, some owners have trouble changing. Part of it is that their investments lock them into certain kinds of strategic positions that they are unable to change because those resources are locked down
right
into that particular technology. They may not have realized it at the time that they were making those investments that, you know, basically what we're saying is your capital investments in terms of equipment and technology are your statement about the future and the strategies of your company.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there was a time when a printing press could last you 20 to 25 years, and that would be fine, but the market's not that way anymore. So we're saying that there needs to be a greater deal of caution. The way that the industry used to minimize its risk was by looking and seeing what other printing organizations had certain kinds of equipment, and then you'd say, ah, we know that works. We can do that too for our market.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, everyone made fun of those printers who said, oh, they looked to see what their competitors had and they brought that piece of equipment. That made sense at that time. That's the way they minimized their risk.
Right.
The way they saw people actually using products as opposed to believing the advertising hype that may have come their way of the vendors or other situations. But today you don't have that because the communications market and the nature of communications has changed so much that you are more likely to be making investments without having any kind of track record of others to choose from.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to minimize that risk, you need to share that risk and share those resources with other businesses who are in the marketplace and be sharing workloads and perhaps co-investing in many of those different technologies, and perhaps even setting up businesses together as joint ventures that will allow you to do that in a very organized way. Another issue that happened that's happened over the years with the nature of the changing communications and the technologies is that you used to be able to lock into certain kinds of products, that these are what you're going to be producing. But look at what happens when run lengths go down. We used to have a lot of long-run mainstream print products, and then as customers start using the internet more and doing more content marketing, there's really no need for reprinting. There's no need for a lot of these mainstream products. So you're trying to fit a lot of short-run products just to keep presses occupied that don't properly absorb the fixed costs of individual jobs. They're totally misconfigured. That drives down your profits, and you have to try to find other areas in order to make that up. Mm-hmm. But if you had an entire workflow based on a certain piece of equipment, that has to change to it. Those things just ripple through the business. So then you're starting to look for business to stay busy as opposed to what's optimal for your firm. Right. Well, you're better off sharing those kinds of risks with other businesses and using the technology in the right way among you. A great example has been in terms of digital printing. Many print businesses who were making the shift from offset to digital a few years ago found that the nature of the selling was much, much different. The sales force had to be educated in a different way and have different kinds of expectations. They had to have more knowledge of jobs and data and the like. That they would start their business from a sales side, not make the investment in the technology, but be selling products from a printer out of their marketplace, who may have met through like Xerox Premier Partners or one of the other trade associations. So before they make the commitment to digital printing, they've already got an ongoing business for it.
Right.
And there's going to be a lot more of that happening as all these products change, and that's one way of making sure that these smaller and mid-sized businesses have access to the right kind of capital and use it very, very wisely.
It really has changed, and that's a lot there, and a couple things, because I know you're passionate about this whole concept around print not being dead. And which feeds into that old mindset that it's not just a, it may have been the mindset that said, look, buy the assets or buy similar assets to the competitors and run the machine. That mindset is almost an industrial age mindset. It just doesn't work, is what I'm hearing from you.
Right.
But,
right.
We still have a lot of people, and I think print is applicable to a lot of stuff, but there are a lot of people that, they're playing defense. It almost seems like they're playing defense, and they talk a lot about print is not dead. And so that's kind of my first question, and then I'll follow that up with another. But tell me about that, your idea around that.
Well, a bunch of us who write for What They Think or just know each other from the industry, every time we would come across some article about print is not dead or somebody saying it, one of us would send the link to the Monty Python sketch about the dead parrot. So if you remember the dead parrot sketch, John Cleese walks into a pet store, and Michael Palin is behind the counter, and John Cleese is saying, I want to return this parrot. This parrot is dead. And then it goes into a long discourse about the parrot not being dead, that it's sleeping, or that it's pining for the fjords.
Right.
Or what beautiful plumage it has, people not talking about the actual subject.
Right.
And the whole idea of print is not dead is almost like saying, let's switch back to I don't know, old tin cans where you had to pull off the pop top or something or other. I mean,
yeah.
It's things that it's an expression of people saying, I want you to use print in the same way that
right.
I can provide it to you. It's
right.
it's not a way of saying that, you've got communication needs, you've got objectives and all that. I need to understand them so I can adapt to them and perhaps get even past them. There's a saying I've used for over 10 years now. Don't worry about your competitors, stay ahead of your clients. I mean, that's
right.
the kind of thing that print is not dead does. And it's also an expression of the generational gap between print business owners, their salespeople, and the people who are in the communications industry.
Right.
If you look at the average age of salespeople and some of the print owners, you got people in their 50s, you got people in their 60s, and then I'm very active in the Raleigh chapter of the American Marketing Association. Mm-hmm. And who's going to that? People from agencies or designers who are corporate communications departments, they're digital media folks. They're in their 30s, they're in their early 40s, often at best. I mean, I'm always the oldest person there. I mean, it's funny how that goes. and it's not that print is dead to them. Print is not even alive to them. They don't even think about it.
Right.
And so what are we doing? We're sending out people into a market that print is not dead. And then the most important people who are developing the messages for marketplaces and their customers and stakeholders and the like, they're looking at this. I don't know what that means.
Yeah.
It doesn't go anyplace. So it's really important that we recognize that to this generation of executives, print is actually new. It's like a baby. I mean, it's brand new to them.
Right.
And we've got interesting and compelling things that say, gosh, this really fits in with our content marketing strategy, or this fits in with our events strategy. These are the people we should be using to manage our logistics for any variety of things, product samples or lead generation or something else that they need. But the print is not dead. That's the industry talking to itself, convincing itself that it's still relevant, like you know, some old movie star, you know, saying, you know, if I apply enough hair dye and enough makeup and you know, I go work out at the gym, people will put me back in a movie, you know.
Yeah. It's the heartthrob. It's he's still a heartthrob 25 years later, and you know, you can't necessarily do that. Well, I think that you're right, and I think that a lot of times it's like I said earlier, it's playing defense. You know, the Got Milk campaign years ago, it ignored the market in some respects. It was like playing defense, and that campaign actually bombed. And you know, I feel like it's the same thing where if you walk in telling somebody, you know, it's like the elephant in the room. And all right, well, let me get it on the table here. You know, print is still alive, or print is, you know, an environmentally friendly way to go. You know, it almost says something like, well, what are you trying to hide? As opposed, yep. So the conversation has to change, doesn't it?
Right. But those kinds of discussions are different every place you go. If let's say you're an implant printing department at a college or university campus, mm-hmm. the idea of print sustainability, I mean, that's really important in that marketplace, because there's such a desire to you know, be environmentally sensitive and the like. So sometimes that's helpful, mm-hmm. but then when you're in other parts of the market, it's some print is sustainable. What does that mean? That is a very, very defensive thing. Mm-hmm. You know, to go back to your comment about the Got Milk campaign,
yeah.
those kinds of things are the easiest campaigns to propose to an association,
right.
or a client or a nonprofit or whatever, because it makes them feel good about themselves. Mm-hmm. And the campaign is actually them talking to themselves. And I went back and I looked at the shipment results of milk since the Got Milk campaign started. And they track with population growth almost exactly. So whether they had a campaign or not,
didn't matter.
Milk shipments would have tracked with population growth. The only time it was a little different was when the Atkins diet was really, really hot,
mm-hmm.
and you saw this little bump up in milk shipments. So they never work, but they make everyone feel really, really good, and then everybody can point to one customer or whatever, say, oh, gee, I'm so glad you did that campaign because it made me think different. But, you know, fine. We make them think different. We make them love print, but are they going to go back to the volumes that they have before? Is the magazine market suddenly going to make a U-turn and go back to printing all those millions of copies of weekly magazines again? No, it's mm-hmm. not. I mean, yeah. It's a totally different marketplace.
Well, and you know, it's funny because when you're talking, it reminds me of a lot of the, quite honestly, the suppliers to our industry, the OEMs, even some of the big ones that their content is really product oriented. It's shoved down the throat, and you know, you could tell them, listen, that's not, you've got to, it's kind of like you said, stay, I love that, stay ahead of your clients. And a lot of times, you know, when you talk about content, obviously that's my world, I've always had this belief that you can't do content for the suppliers. That's why all the trade stuff essentially died off. And it's the same, whether you're saying, I got milk, and let me tell you about milk, 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 milk. It's the same thing as, hey, I got this machine. Let me tell you about this machine. Let me tell you how great I am. I mean, you don't see the pretty girl across the room, walk over to her and say, hey, I saw you from across the room. I thought I'd come over and tell you about me. You know, you got to ask questions. Your content has to be about the marketplace that you're trying to serve. And isn't that kind of the mindset that you're talking about?
It is. When digital printing was coming to the marketplace in the 1990s, I've always tried to annoy people in a very thoughtful way. So I would go to the trade show, you know, exhibit and all that, and I'd talk to sometimes somebody I knew or sometimes somebody, you know, just in the sales position. And some of the digital printing companies were owned by multinational conglomerates and all kinds of stuff. So I would say to them, you know, tell me about the digital printing. Why is it important? And I'd say, oh, personalization, variable printing, and it's really good product because they can work with customers to do such and such. And then I would ask the question, in your other division that sells to blank, could have been a medical or automotive or whatever, in your division that sells blank, how are they using your technology?
Right.
And I would get dead silence. Nobody was using their technology, not even in the same company.
Yeah.
So a big change to the market came when Xerox was finally decided that, we've been selling this wrong. We have to go out and create products. We have to go out and create applications to help people get over this because most print business owners are not marketers. They love production. They love the smell of the ink. They love the touch and the feel of the product, which is why so much of the articles about print is not dead refer to about touching print. Mm-hmm. and how tactile it is when you can get more information from watching a video or going to an event than you can, you know, by saying, oh gosh, this paper feels really, really nice. This is one reason why so many of the successful printers have had backgrounds in publishing or graphic design or the ad business, especially the ones in digital printing, because they've seen the other side of the nature of the communications objective and how to influence people based on the ways that you do things, not as opposed to, you know, the physical things that you're producing.
Right, right. Yeah, I believe that there is a different, it's not necessarily a generational thing, but there is a different mindset of people that are succeeding. And I don't have a problem, and I'll say this, I don't have a problem with someone saying and talking about print. I mean, there are, you don't throw the baby out with the bathwater, right?
No.
As a printer, we print, and certainly I want you to go out there and I want you to beat the pavement and sell as much print as you possibly can. And some guys are going to die down the street and we're going to pick up a little bit of what they've done, and that's great. But I have no problem with that strategy as long as they're incubating the strategy of a new path and a new discussions with their clients about managing their communication in multiple levels of marketing services. Am I wrong in that?
No, that's absolutely correct. And if you can't provide those marketing services, it's not that you should be out of the business. You should have an alliance with somebody who does.
Right.
Who's able to do that. The one of the toughest things to see is if you go onto many printing businesses' websites, if they're not proving themselves with digital media, they're not going to connect with today's print buyer. If they still have these old static sites of pictures with buildings with cars in front of it, mm-hmm. and talking about the resolution and the quality of the products and all that. I mean, quality as a sales point in printing is now a given. You know, 30, 40 years ago when quality varied tremendously from shop to shop, that was one thing. But today, with all the technologies and the software and all that we have, the range of quality and errors is so much narrower that good quality is a given. Mm-hmm. But if you, I love going on printers' websites where I actually see a video of a customer, not talking about quality, but talking about this is what we did, this is our project, these were the hurdles that we faced, this is how our relationship with this company really helped us, and they advised us on this, and these were the ideas that we came up with, and this is why it was successful, and many of those things will have nothing to do with print.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
But about working with that company, and it's amazing how few printing organizations will even have pictures of customers, not a face, but you know their objectives, how they were met, how things changed because they work with them.
I'll tell you this story. There was a friend of mine, printer. He says, "Hey, check out my website." And this was a few years back. I said, "You know, I'm not a web design expert, but yeah, I'll take a look at it." And so I looked at it, and it was organized with certain tabs or something like that. And so I called him. I said, "So, all right, let me ask you a question. What do you think the most important tab is on your website?" And he said, without missing a beat, he says, "The solutions tab." And I said, "Wrong." I said, "The first place I went was the clients. I wanted to see who you were doing business with. I wanted to see who you're rubbing elbows with, because that's what defines you. Not your equipment. It's who knows you." And
right.
And so he had a light bulb moment, but I think we need more and more of that, because they've got they've already got the hook into these clients. They can have deeper discussions, don't you think?
If you're having salespeople go in who only know how many sales calls did I make today, how many proposals did I send out, and that kind of process, they're never going to detect those kinds of things. A common thing in the early 2000s, why the printing industry did not detect the massive change in the nature of communications, was that they would send print salespeople out to companies, and they say, "Oh, well, you know, we cut our budget for print." And then they go back right on their call report, say, "Cut their budget for print." And they never asked, "What else are you doing? What are you doing instead? Tell me about that." There were not those kinds of questions being asked, not just by the salespeople, but by the entire industry.
Yeah.
And it's that kind of probing into a customer that a business development process starts to uncover.
It's a fascinating thing for me. I am absolutely positively fascinated by the fact that our industry knocks on doors and gets to a point where the goal is essentially is to be on the list, you know, to be on the quote list. You know,
right.
it's saying, "I'm just feverishly working for when there is a need that I am one of the few that is a top of mind, just to get the opportunity to quote." And it seems like there's not a lot of, that's a not necessarily a margin maker. You know, salespeople don't exist for that. They exist for a much more creative conversation and the creation of demand, as opposed to the other way. So that's a tough thing. Again, it goes back to that mindset, and there are some great companies out there right now that are starting to think differently and talk, having much different conversations.
And a lot of it is the nature of the people we're hiring. I mean, print salespeople are penalized for being curious.
Yeah.
They're rewarded for executing a process. And that's why the businesses that have succeeded in implementing business development don't let their salespeople do it. They hire people from the industries that they're targeting who have knowledge of the functions and the objectives and the processes in those businesses, and they use them to go work with prospects and understanding their business first before deciding whether or not they can help them or improve their situation or make their ability to reach their objectives better. And many times those objectives don't involve print. The person who wrote the introduction to Unsquaring the Wheel is John Buddington, who was a graduate of RIT. He had a printing company that was in serious trouble called Global Printing. He decided to put an agency front end on the on that business called Global Thinking, which has all kinds of data capabilities. And that business, because they're I guess you want to call it communications process agnostic or something like that, they're involved in all different ways that their clients communicate with the marketplace, some of which may or may not be print. He found his print business expanded tremendously. Wow. Because they were working on campaigns, there's much less price sensitivity. Their shop, their print business is always full, but their agency business was growing even faster. So it's those kinds of things, because that was a recognition that being on the business development side, in his case, putting an agency together, you have different people of different mindsets and different skills. This is not something that is you're going to be able to change in an organization by hiring one person. You have to make a commitment to do something different and keep it away from your existing business, because they are so different from each other.
Yeah, you really got to, I tell you, I think we're just living in this world where they, you know, I had a guest on here before, Colby Jubenville was talking about safety, and and he, you know, we live in that world, and even you could even argue that you know, a lot of the technology is born out of automating the stuff that we're most insecure about. You know, I think a lot about the dating sites, and you know, back in, you know, when I was doing it, you had to get rejected and get dumped and all that kind of stuff, and you had to go through that stuff. Today, you can just cut through that pain and filter out exactly who has the same likes and dislikes. And, you know, the irony is that the divorce rate isn't any different. So it's, but it is part of that. And I think that, you know, finding those, that getting to know people, I think we're ultimately getting to a place where we demand more of an intimate relationship, and you are going to need more business development types that are going to truly have an understanding and, like you said, have that curiosity. I love that. Not, you know, the salespeople are being penalized for being curious. So that's pretty wild. Hey, before I ask you for let's take a little tangent here. Before I ask you, I want to ask you about advice. You know, if you said, hey, here's, other than getting the book Unsquaring the Wheel, you would what would be the advice? But before I ask you that, give me the quick 411 on Dr. Joe Webb. What's the chronology? You and I had talked about that before, but give us the quick bio.
Sure. And in a graphic arts perspective, I was a comic books fan when I was little. I'm not as much of a fan now, but of course, you know, everyone's a comic books fan. And at that time, living in New York, DC Comics was in Manhattan, and one day my mom took me to their weekly tour, which I believe was on Thursdays at 10 a.m. They would take all these kids, and they would go through the offices, and I saw my first color proof there. They made a big deal about, you know, the separation of the colors. I had no clue that that's the way they printed them. I thought that it just came out.
That is so cool.
So I swear I learned my C and my M and my Y and my K, and met some of the artists. I got Murphy Anderson's autograph. He was the artist at that time for Hawkman and some other things. So that was kind of neat. But I had an interest in art, not from a artist's perspective, but you know, just a sense of the way people would communicate. I thought I was going to be involved in some kind of journalism. It turns out I never went to school for those kinds of things. But you know, I write a lot now for whatthethink.com, so right. I'm kind of in that. My undergraduate degrees, I had two majors: managerial sciences and marketing, and those worked out well together. And I was told that I'd better get involved in this management information systems thing.
Yeah.
Because it was going to be really important one day. So my master's degree is in MIS, and then I started to when I was in school for my master's, I was working for AGFA in the graphic systems division. And then I finished up my master's, and then I started to work for Kemco Photo Products, which is a long buried part of Konica, not even Konica Minolta, Konica. At that time. And then I was finishing up my doctoral work, and in 87 I graduated from NYU with my PhD in graphic arts management and technology. And the day later, after doctoral orals, I became a consultant and worked with the Graphic Arts Blue Book. With Harry and Tim Lewis. That was a directory of printing businesses for major metro areas. Harry taught me lots and lots of stuff about market research, because when he was a student in the 1930s, he had interned with George Gallup and Macy's, which at that time was doing some pioneering work in market research. And he had brought that research mindset to the development of databases and the directory business. So I took over the consulting that he was doing at that time. And the most interesting thing I've done with that was in 1995, I started the Trendwatch Graphic Arts business, which was a market research business where we sold multi-client studies and the like. We sold that business in 2000 to Reed Elsevier. And then in 2003, I was asked to start writing a column for whatthethink.com, and I told them I'm not interested. I will do it only for 1 year, and I'm now in my 15th year. It's 15 years now. It's hard to believe.
That's fantastic. I know, but that's great. That's great. They're a good group there. I like them a lot.
They are.
You know, I got to tell you, I mean, that's fascinating. So let me tell you, I like doing that. I like hearing about people's path. Because people take pride in talking about their path, and it gives them a moment of reflection. And a couple of things as I'm listening to you is that story matters. I think story matters. I think it matters for all the salespeople that want to develop relationships and do the business development, all the companies that want to do. I think it matters to the younger generation. I think it matters more because they are all heads down in their technology. And heck, we all are. And so I'll tell you this story. I was up in Michigan. I was seeing my friend Bob White up at Wolverine Solutions. And my son had a hockey tournament. And I literally had two games a day. But between games, Bob was gracious enough to give us a tour of their plant. My kid I was just all goosebumpy about it, because he looked at, I'm not kidding you, they had this mailing machine there, and envelopes are flying through there, and his eyes lit up. And I thought to myself, my gosh, you know, people are not seeing this. And so there's two things there. One is, when you're telling your story, I can visualize some of that stuff. When you're talking about being a young kid and loving comics and going in there, the first thing I thought of was my son in that same instance. And so story matters because it helps connect people. And I think it also matters for us as a tool to engage these new generations. You talk about that kind of that generational abyss or that chasm. I think people are craving that, don't you?
I do, and if it comes about from being curious and asking questions, because when you get a sense of where people came from and the different times that they were there, you start to understand what does this person understand? What's their experience been? I mean, if I do some demographic work, I mean, one thing that's not to get too economic here, but if you're a millennial, if you're born after 1982, you're going to be over half of the workforce by 2020, okay? That means half of the workforce will have never worked during an economic boom. And it changes their perspective on economics, business, all kinds of things. And it's really important to understand the context of the experience that people have. So like those executives who are making decisions about communications today, if they are in their 30s, they've never been in a job like that. They didn't go to college at a time when print was growing. And the same thing with a lot of the print business owners. I mean, the ones that have had the most problems adapting to the marketplace are the ones who were there for print's heyday in the 1980s and the early 1990s. And the ones who came to the market later, who are more familiar with computing technology, especially capabilities of digital printing and databases and the like, have had to have a grinded out day-to-day be creative mentality in their business. And those are the businesses that are doing better today, because there's no, you know, to go back to Monty Python, there's no pining for the fjords. I mean, it's been grinded out day-to-day and come up with something new for every single client because they did not grow up in the industry at a time when you could just go into a client and say, you know, we want to bid on your order. What do we need to get the order? That kind of thing. You have to be creative today. Most businesses are not using print in anything other than a nominal way. And if you want some kind of relationship with them, you have to understand what they're doing and why they're doing it and what their objectives are, who their audience is, where they're failing, where they're doing great, the things that they like to do in the future, how they interact with the marketplace overall. Is it through salespeople, distributors, events, seminars, webinars, and the like? You have to have a far broader education in the nature of communications to be successful, and that's where a lot of these younger managers who have been using computers and cell phones and all the expectations that those create, that's one of the reasons why they're doing it better.
Yeah. You're dead nuts on. And Holly, I tell you, you and I are. I certainly enjoy I'm from a selfish perspective. These conversations are great for me. I'm sitting here taking notes. You know, I'm thinking this is good for me. This is good for some of my stuff. But if you said, so let's agree that we believe there's a mindset. So if you said, all right, sometimes it's just the toughest part is just starting. So what's that first, again, other than going out and getting unsquaring the wheel at Amazon.com, right. What would be that first step? What's that first thing you would say? This is what you got to do immediately. Here's the number one first thing you got to do from an advice standpoint.
I'm going to give it a little context.
Okay.
Every business that is active today was started at a time in the marketplace where there were certain market conditions and you made certain business assumptions about what your business was going to look like, the markets it was going to serve, and the way that was going to be done. Mm-hmm. And that affected the nature of the people you hired, your business partners, your suppliers, and your capital investments. All right, so most everyone does not go back to say, oh, we did all those things, but not from that perspective. What was in our heads at that time? What did we believe to be true about the need for the products that we were producing? It may have been as simple as, well, everybody uses print. Mm-hmm. And that is the flimsiest of excuses. But if you were doing it in the 1980s or even the early 1990s, that was enough.
Right? Yeah.
But now our first book, Renewing the Printing Industry, the first time that came out was 2003-2005, was published mainly in 2007. What does the book start with? A blank page that says, start with a blank sheet of paper. And that's where you do that exercise. What did we believe at that time? And are those things still true? Most likely not, because if you were to design a business from scratch today, it would look totally different.
Yeah.
And that difference between those two points in time, that's the gap that you have to bridge. And you're going to do it with first some strategic thinking that you're going to be going over again and again and clarifying it and changing it and the like. And that's the place that you've got to start. Say, if I were to do this business from scratch today, what is it that I would do?
I love it.
And that's the kind of thing, because then you're confronted with, do we have an ongoing enterprise or not? And how do we unwind all those assumptions which we made come true because of the way we invested and the way we hired and the way we thought about our business, and how do we turn them into something that's going to be valid in 2020, 2022, 2025? That takes a lot of thinking.
It does. It takes a lot of it and a new way of thinking. That's awesome stuff. Well, listen, here we are again. I mean, you and I could probably suck the air out of a room for half a day.
It'll become a mini series.
Hey, I'm telling you, man, it's good stuff. Kindred spirits in a lot of ways, and I just can't thank you enough for doing this. Let me ask you before I let you go, though. What projects are you? I mean, you said you're busy, but and I know you're doing your column and all that stuff. What projects are you working on right now?
We've had several books in the printing market, most of which were distributed free because if you wanted to undermine the old guard, you had to use the tools that were available at that time. So
right.
That was renewing the printing industry. The big one was Disrupting the Future,
yep.
which was followed by This Point Forward. As I go back and look at those books, they're still good, but the marketplace is different. So when Richard Romano and I, who co-authored those books with me, when we looked at the marketplace today, we said, gosh, around 1998 was a really big turning point for our industry and for communications because of the internet. 2008 was when we really started to feel the pressure of social media and smartphones and tablets and the like. And I think that we are in that kind of stage right now. Printing shipments have been pretty awful for the last 6 months, and I don't think it's because of the economy or anything like that. There's been a really massive shift in the nature of retailing, the consumers, communications formats that are important for the industry to understand. So we're going to take some of the concepts which I talked about here, and the book is called The Third Wave. And we're in the process of negotiating for that book to be made available at Print 17.
Oh, cool.
So somehow people should find out about that, because the vendor whom we're working with is going to make that book available for at no charge to people who go to the show.
Awesome.
Also we're working with a couple of trade associations to bring that a book out to the marketplace. But Richard and I are writing that right now, and we're going to take some of the ideas we had in This Point Forward, which was one of your problems in management is you're thinking too much of the past and not enough about the future. Or we're going to put it in a totally different context and explain what needs to be next, so that you make sure that you have a ongoing enterprise in 5 and 10 years from now.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. I can't wait. I'll be getting my copy. I'll need a signed copy. Well, you know what? Here's the deal. So I'm gonna come over to Raleigh. I got to come over there a bunch, for my kids. So that'll be my chance to get my signed copy, but also you and I steal away for a cup of coffee.
Absolutely.
I'd look forward to that. That would mean a lot to me, because I think that we have a lot more to talk about. But, Joe, this I really appreciate. I think this is great stuff. I think Be prepared. I'm probably going to need to have you back on because there's a lot of still unexplored stuff here that I think the readers would love to hear from you. So Thanks so much. I really appreciate it.
Well, thanks very much. Happy to do it.
All right. I appreciate it. Talk to you soon.
Bye.
Take care.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Brushstrokes, a podcast powered by Canvas Magazine. I think you'll agree that my guest, Dr. Joe Webb, is among the most dedicated people within our industry. You know, sometimes he gets a little bit of a bum rap for being blunt, but the reality is that's tough love. He's in love with our industry. He's committed his life to it. He's written books. He's authored articles. He continues to do the research. He continues to meet with people. And he continues to use venues like this to spread the word. I am really, really grateful for his time today. I think he is one of the more positive people in our industry. He has an optimistic view of what our opportunity is, and he's simply encouraging us to take it. So I hope you enjoyed this episode of Brushstrokes. We are thrilled that you're listening, and we look forward to our next episode. Until then, be the buffalo. Take care.